Go Podcast 13.23. Michigan is in the tournament, unlike Michigan State last year. Seth Davis is mad. Indiana fans are mad. I guess Dayton fans are mad. Michigan's in the tournament. They're actually in the tournament. They're not in Dayton. Unlike some other team last year.
If you have to play in, you're not in. That's the rule.
Yep. Right. And I think probably the funniest thing that happened was that less than an hour before the brackets came out, Jerry Palm put Michigan in the field. So if this happens again, Michigan's on the bubble, or they're fighting for a one seed last year and Jerry Palm's like, nah, don't listen to Jerry Palm. Not only was Michigan in the field, they're not in Dayton. So they were clearly easily in the field, despite the bubble having things like Virginia Tech making it. So Jerry Palm's not good at his job. But I'll tell you who is. The AmGo podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have three retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out ugpmichiganapparel.com or find our stuff at mgoblogstore.com. We also want to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Guide, Human Element, Signal Wire, From the Cheap Seats, which is the Sklar Brothers podcast, Team Fan Club, and Prentice 4M, which is where we usually are. So Michigan's in the field as an 11. They get a matchup against Colorado State in Indianapolis. And first blush, this looks like an excellent first round matchup for Michigan. So Colorado State is the worst sixth seed in the field by some distance. They are sixth in KenPom's luck metric. The only common opponent that they've played this season is San Diego State. Michigan beat San Diego State fairly handily despite having some early season issues, and Colorado State went 0-2 against them. Now, they did go 14-4 in the Mountain West. They have wins over Boise State and St. Mary's and Creighton in the non-conference. So this is not a paper tiger. This is a sixth seed that earned its way to where it is, but if you just look at who they are and what they try to do, this feels like a pretty good setup for Michigan.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of my initial impression is I think this is a pretty favorable matchup from a personnel perspective. I think David Roddy plays the five spot, I think roughly a third of the time, if my math is right, and then Brian can correct me if I'm wrong. But
yeah,
if that's the case and he's matched up against Dickinson, you're going to want to get him the ball in low post, try to get him in some foul trouble. And if you can succeed in doing that early, I think that's going to go a long way towards winning that game.
So Roddy is a really interesting basketball player. I've watched some highlight films from him now and looked up all his stats. And he's ninth in the KenPom Player of the Year standings, which is impressive because he's a Mountain West player. And his team is 31st in KenPom, and there is a team adjustment for that. So he's a huge usage guy. He shoots 62-45 from the floor. And you go into his synergy stats, and this pops out whenever you watch any highlight films. This is a dude who is crushing undersized Mountain West guys in the post. And also, if you try to put a bigger guy on him, he will either pull up from three or he will go isolation against them for buckets. I don't know if I've seen a guy like this at the high major level.
What is Roddy going about 6'6", 260? I mean, that is that's a special skill set to be able to pull up at that size.
Yeah, he's listed at 6'6", 255. So you got that just about on the nose.
Wow. That's impressive stuff for a guy that size.
He looks like a linebacker, really, except for he can, like, yeah. I mean, he can ISO. Everything else about his game. I ran with Liddell just because I couldn't really think of anybody else, but Liddell doesn't isolate people, right? Like, he's not going to drive on you.
Probably the closest. Honestly, I would go more Keegan Murray, because Keegan Murray is like a brutal down low presence, and then he can also take you off the dribble from the perimeter if you try to get up to into his shooting.
Here's a recent blast from the past. Are we talking maybe a slightly bigger Teddy Allen here?
He's much better than Teddy.
Yeah, same body type, just a bit bigger, but I mean, just the pull up game and all that sort of thing.
So yeah, this is can Roddy actually translate what he's done against guys who are Mountain West players and have that work against Michigan? I think that's going to be the main question. So do we want Hunter Dickinson on him when Roddy could go ISO and blow by him and maybe pick up a foul? No. So then the question is, can Musa Diabate check Roddy? And who, in a team that plays a lot of small ball, is Dickinson going to check? Now, they do play a 6'10 guy for about a third of the game who will be comfortable for Dickinson to check. And they do have a 6'8, 235-pound guy who's more of a 4 than a 5. So he's best when he's shooting from the outside is Deshaun Thomas. He's a 39% three-point shooter, not very good inside the line, doesn't have much of a presence as a rim protector, and as a guy who will probably get backed down by Dickinson pretty easily. So Colorado State wants to see if they can get away with not putting James Morris, who's their traditional center, in the game, and Michigan needs to figure out who the hell Dickinson is going to try to check.
Yeah, I don't really know, because their guards can all shoot. I mean, they're 38%, 39%, and 45% for David Roddy. Like, the only guy who doesn't really shoot is a backup backup wing, Chandler Jacobs. Like, all the other guys are at least 300. They don't shoot a lot of threes, though. Like, they're kind of short, so I wonder if you can just zone them and, you know, if you want to drive to the lane, have Dickinson down there and then just, I guess, outscore them, because Dickinson's going to dominate all these guys, especially if they, which Roddy's the biggest guy they got down there.
Well, I mean, they do have,
go ahead, Brian.
They do have a traditional center, we should state that, who does play about a third of the game for them.
Right, but when he's in, Dickinson's going to guard him.
So,
like, the question is, what's going on the rest of the game? And I think if they can just, you know, survive Roddy and feed Dickinson, they're Lilliputian. There's nobody who can come close to him on this team if that guy's not in.
Thinking about this from a matchup perspective, I may get a few eye rolls here, but it seems like Brandon Johns, from a physical perspective, at least from a defensive standpoint, might be well served to check Roddy in stretches if Musa can't stand up to that sort of girth. And then Terrence Williams is also another potential interesting matchup, particularly if he's hitting an outside shot. If he gets his first three to go down, then all of a sudden he becomes more viable in a game where you may have to throw out some bodies to sort of absorb some fouls against Roddy.
No, I think that this could be a game where Brandon Johns, if he's mentally there at all, could be pretty productive, especially because, you know, you're looking at that power forward spot. It's either Roddy or 6'5 guys.
Absolutely.
So Michigan needs to get offense or rebounding out of that spot, something that Colorado State has done a really good job of avoiding. So they're actually 61st nationally in defensive rebounding. They're terrible offensively for size reasons, but they haven't played a whole lot of genuinely big teams. And when they played San Diego State, you know, that was a 30-point blowout in which San Diego State rebounded half their misses. So they've been susceptible to teams with legit size. And when they had a rematch against San Diego State, again, 13 offensive rebounds, 45% of their misses. So if Michigan is able to do that, it's going to be hard for Colorado State to keep pace.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically the plan on this one, is I think just outscore them. Because they're, like you said, there's not going to be a good matchup if they go small. If they're bringing in their center, I think that's a win for Michigan. So,
well, yeah, for me, this is like a shot volume game.
Yeah,
and if Michigan's going to be plus 10 on shot volume, then I think it's going to be a win. But if they're not able to do that, they don't shoot well enough from the perimeter, because these guys can shoot the lights out.
I haven't checked the metrics on this, but I'm inclined to think Michigan grades out pretty well in terms of offensive rebounding. So it does seem like that's an area that we can potentially exploit.
Well, the steals are going to be the other thing, too. I mean, that obviously everyone remembers, you know, all of a sudden the second half, no one can hold on to the ball. But they got to be really careful against this team because they love to pick it. They love to, like, draw you into somewhere and then bring down a double and, you know, pick your pocket. So, I mean, Eli's going to have to be careful. Jones is going to have to keep doing what he's been doing. You know, like, if Michigan has, you know, they haven't played in a while and that turnover bug pops up again, this is the wrong team for that because that goes right back into the same possessions thing.
Yeah, and so a couple of things sort of jump out from their defensive profile on synergy as a team. They're poor defending pick and roll ball handlers. So this could be a game where you see Devontae Jones in that floater game do pretty well. They're hideously bad in transition defensively, and they're bad in isolation. Now, Michigan doesn't have a lot of ISO players, that's true, but that just kind of talks about, like, where their overall athleticism is, and I don't think it's great.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have a problem imagining Michigan scoring a lot here unless they're just missing. Like, that, like, the doom scenario here is lots of open threes that they miss, and or, you know, Hunter's not just shoving these guys around underneath. And then, like, the perfect scenario is if, you know, Roddy has to end up on Dickinson when they go small, put two fouls on him, and, you know, they really can't remove him from the court. You know, he's going to play the four if he's not out there at the five, but, I mean, he's been playing 82% of their minutes. So, I mean, if you can wear him out even, right? Like, throw Johns at him and just say, John, just tire this dude out any way you can. You really couldn't. Michigan's just got to outscore them otherwise. Like, this game could get ugly if Michigan can't score, make their shots, because they're going to be open.
So the other major guy for Colorado State is Isaiah Stevens, 6 foot point guard out of Texas, shoots 50, 38, and is a 90% free throw shooter. So he's a guy who has a beeline like turnover rate and assist rate close to 30, been really effective at the Mountain West level. And if you look at him as a player, he does most of their pick and roll initiations as you'd expect. He's a good spot up shooter, but he's not great. And is not really an isolation guy. So that hopefully is going to be good for Michigan. The problem is that, yeah, he's a pull up guy. So he has 149 jump shots off the dribble, and he's got 0.9 points per possession. Now, he's not huge. He's not 6'5", right? So maybe we're going to get a better result than we've seen when Eli Brooks or Devontae Jones tries to check a Johnny Davis. But that pull-up has always been a weakness this year, and we've got another guy who's proficient in it.
I like it that he's 6 foot. I mean, obviously he's a proficient pull-up guy, but as Brian alluded to, that's against a different level of size, length, and athleticism. And historically, this all started, I think, last year with this pull-up issues with guys like Dwayne Washington that are close to like 6'3", and then Geo Baker, 6'4". Mm-hmm. And I forget the guy's name from Minnesota this year, but he's 6'4", 6'5". The 5'11", 6 foot guys, you know, I could be wrong in this, but I don't necessarily think they've been problematic for us to the extent that the aforementioned guys were. So that gives me some hope there that we're able to sort of fend that off.
Yeah, from a team standpoint, offensively, this is a team that is 19th in effective field goal full percentage, and they're very good inside the arc. And Michigan was one of the worst teams in the Big Ten defending twos this year. So that's going to be a potential issue. They also do a very bad job at preventing threes. So they're 337th at preventing threes from going up. And they were decent at not having those go down, but that's probably randomness, especially when you look at the consistency, how this lineup looks. And what they don't have is they don't have anybody who's going to be checking Caleb Houston, who's anywhere near his size. You might get a 6'5 or a 6'3 guy who doesn't have great athleticism. So you got to hope that Caleb Houston's able to rise and fire over these guys and not be as affected by whether he's got a hand in his face as he has been for much of the year.
I don't even think he's going to have a hand in his face. I think they're going to double down on Hunter, and there's going to be lots of room available to shoot. Just has to make the shot. What they're probably not going to be is transition, because I think Colorado State is like first in the country at slowing down their opponents.
So what that means is that nobody on Colorado State goes to the offensive boards. That's why they're 340th in offensive rebounding.
So it sounds like this is some iteration of a pack line defense where you want to keep everything in front and live with the stuff from the perimeter.
Yeah, I mean, especially given their size, they have to be doubling the post pretty frequently as well. So Michigan is going to get open looks from three, and they just they can't have a 17% night.
No. I mean, that baseline for me typically is you got to hit one third of them. If you're somewhere around 33%, somewhere in that vicinity, given our size advantage, I think this is pretty favorable for us.
Right. And as mentioned, it's going to be in Indianapolis, so it should be a partisan home crowd for Michigan, and that will be beneficial. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about potential second-round matchup and the rest of the bracket.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up, you can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. And now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Under name, image, and likeness group licensing agreements, college athletes can now earn money. Still, the indirect consequence has many athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. As a group sponsor, you can offer a minimum of $100 in a one-time payment, or $20 or more per month on your credit card. Monthly payments by supporters, alumni, and season ticket holders of $20 or more will help athletes tremendously. Being a student athlete is not easy. It's hard. And until now, athletes were not allowed to work to make extra money while on a scholarship. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for their favorite team or coach with a simple commitment to a group licensing agreement. Group licensing benefits all scholarship players, not just the starters. It provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train together for games. It provides security for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. Support student athletes today and sponsor a team at TeamFanClub.com.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
not to get ahead of ourselves, but we traditionally preview a potential second round matchup because we don't have the turnaround time. Longwood is the 14 seed. Probably not going to see them. They went 15-1 in the Big South. They have a 106-73 loss at Iowa to open the year. They also lost to Georgetown, which is hard to do. This does not look like a dangerous mid-major that might pick off Tennessee unless they're super hot from three. They were six in the country at three-point percentages, but they're just small.
I saw a Longwood game this year. They started the season against Iowa, and it was that 106-point game from Iowa that at the beginning of the year, and that's really all you need to know about them is they're very Big South.
All right, so the three seed is Tennessee. This is a slightly bad draw. Tennessee is the best three seed in the field, but two of the other three seeds are Big Ten teams, and Michigan couldn't have drawn either of them. So it was either these guys or Texas Tech, and they're not particularly far apart in the ranking. So it is what it is. Tennessee's an interesting team. They have Kennedy Chandler, who is a huge five-star recruit. They have three or four guys who play the center. They play three guards about half the time, and they're the number three defensive team in the country. So this is not really an offensively driven team, but they really get after it, and they force turnovers at a top 15 rate.
So this is a team that I watched against Kentucky, and Brian hit it pretty well right there. This team, in a lot of ways, they mirror Texas Tech. They just wreak havoc defensively. Like, they have a lot of speed on the perimeter with Chandler in particular, and they have some rim protection. I don't know that they have a true seven-footer, but I believe they have a few guys with solid block rates in there, and Chandler is sort of the guy that makes the engine go, so to speak. But I think Michigan, you know, given all their defensive woes, this may be a welcome sight in terms of defense because they're not a juggernaut offensively. They don't have a lot of size in the backcourt. They don't have a lot of a pull-up game in them. So from a defensive perspective, this is actually, you know, given the seeding, it's a relatively favorable matchup. Again, I'd say, you know, you'd rather play some other teams, but given the alternative of playing the behemoths with the one or two seeds, I'll take it.
I mean, they do have a center in Euros Plavsic, who's a true 7-footer and, you know, pretty long too. But
he's a 7-footer, but he's very below the rim. He has Austin Davis block rate. John Fulkerson is the guy. He's kind of a beanpole, but he is at center a portion of the time. He's only 220 pounds, so they play Plavsic about half the game, and then the rest of it is like that guy's 220, that guy's 230. Mm-hmm. So they might have to rely on him a little bit more than they usually would if Dickinson is going off.
Yeah, they had another guy who was botched the name, but Olivier Nakamua. They lost him to an ankle injury in like early February. But I mean, since then, I think they've only had one loss. So it's not like they've missed him that much. But that guy, he was much more of a shooter. And since he's been gone, especially like when Plavsic's on the court, they'll use Fulkerson as a four. And then there's like no spacing for them.
Yeah. So Fulkerson is not a shooter. None of their guys at the five really are. So for big chunks of the game, you're going to have two guys out on the court who are not 3-point threats because they're playing a freshman named Brandon Huntley Hatfield at the four and five quite a bit. And only about a third of the game do they have actually four threats from three on the court at the same time. So that will be, I think, beneficial for Michigan because they can have Musa Diabate kind of roam off guys, and he seems like a real good option for that.
Yeah, this seems like the quintessential Hunter Dickinson drop coverage game, and that's exactly where you want him. If you don't have to face a stretch five and you don't have to rotate a lot to shooters, keep him on the court, keep him out of foul trouble, you just have to worry about Kennedy Chandler really in pick and roll because he is – that burst is special. Like, his agility is elite, and keep him out of transition. And I think offensively – Michigan can sort of curtail them a bit. It's the other end where I think we have the concerns.
Yeah. So defensively, it'll be difficult, but just sort of a high level overview. This is not a team that posts up. So 7% of their possessions and 17% percentile for them. So This is not a game where Hunter Dickinson is going to be picking up fouls in the post. That's beneficial. They don't really do very well at isolation, despite having some guys who are great ISO players, and they don't do well shooting off the dribble. So unless there's a huge mismatch in terms of height and athleticism that Tennessee's suddenly going to exploit, I don't think that's going to be really on the table. And since two of the three guards they play a lot are Chandler, who's 6 foot, and Zakai Ziegler, who's listed at 5'9", and must be extraordinarily short to be listed at 5'9".
When they put 5'9" on the roster itself.
Yeah. Like Avery Queen was listed at 5'9". So hopefully the pull-up stuff won't be a huge issue. But as Matt D was saying, this is the number 8 steals team in the country.
Yeah, keeping them out of transition, that is going to be number 1 with a bullet on the game plan, because Kennedy Chandler, I've seen, he is a one-man wrecking crew in the open court. That guy is fast. And I think keeping them out of transition would go a long way towards hopefully pulling in upsets to just take care of the ball. And I think it's critical to win the field goal attempt war in this particular game. We have to value the ball and value the possession.
Yeah, the thing about Kennedy Chandler, too, is that he knows how to find his friends. So, yeah. You know, he gets open in transition. He's going to pop it back out again. And Santiago Vescovi is a guy you cannot lose at the perimeter. That's not his only game. He can get to the rim, and he can draw fouls, too. So, you know, they've got some guards who kind of scare me on the as far as the athleticism versus our guards.
Well, I'll be fascinated to see what this looks like in terms of Hunter Dickinson in the post, because if you go in synergy and you look these guys up, it's the opposite of what you might expect. So their big Serbian dude is an 18th percentile post defender, and Fulkerson is 98th percentile. Now that's on 26 and 31 possessions, so that's not like huge, but Fulkerson, people are shooting 23% against him in the post. He's 220 pounds. Like, that doesn't seem like it should be possible. And if you look, go and you look at the SEC bigs this year, there's no Zach Edey's out there. I mean, Colin Castleton's out there, Sheboy's out there, but you know, I don't know if there's really the density of teams who are going to actually post you up. And given the fact that their number one and number two bigs have a total of 50 post-up possessions defensively between them on the season, indicates that it's just a different league.
Yeah, they did hold Sheboy. I mean, he was under 100-0 rating. Like, he was 5 of 10 from 2, didn't make some of his free throws. But, like, that's a pretty good day against Sheboy. So, I mean, they've got something there that's working. Matt, you watched that game. Was there anything you noticed about, like, their approach to a big down?
You know, I'll say that in watching Tennessee, the speed at which they play on defense, you know, it's pretty impressive. As Brian noted, it's a different league, right? The Big Ten is much more of a lunch pail league, slow it down, value the possession. The SEC is essentially the polar opposite. They want to go, 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 go. Get out in space and play as fast as you possibly can. And as Seth touched on, having a guy like Kennedy Chandler to sort of spearhead that goes a long way. But, yeah, I could see if in that potential matchup they're digging down with a guy like Kennedy Chandler because, you know, frankly, he's fast enough to dig down in there and recover back out and not get beat on a closeout. So I could see him being a big part of the game plan against Dickinson in the post. You just have to hope that in that theoretical matchup that, as Brian noted, he can just exploit a 220-pound guy because, you know, no offense to him because he's turned out to be a great defender at Michigan State, but the Marcus Binghams of the world are just not going to be able to hold up to Hunter Dickinson on the overwhelming majority of nights.
Yeah, and I mean, the issue for Michigan is that this seems like a team that's going to be pretty good at making the perimeter guys uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And there's been such a huge gap between Michigan shooting open looks and shooting anything contested. And I have, this just feels like a game where Michigan can't find anything from the perimeter. And that sort of Shaundi Brown ability from last year, where it's like, yeah, you're in my face, but I don't care, is absent.
What was during the Big Ten tournament? What did neutral Caleb Houston shoot? Was he proficient? I think he was 3 of 8 against IU. I don't know what. Yeah, I'm pretty sure
he was all right. Yeah.
That's if we can get that sort of clip from him, I'll take it. Anything above 33% from him, I think it goes a long way toward not only putting up points on the board, but just allowing Hunter Dickinson to play one-on-one, and that's the thing. Then it just gives us a multitude of options to defeat the opposition with.
Well, we saw what happens. Caleb Houston on the road, he misses all the time. At home, he can't, you know, he hits everything. And then when you put him in a neutral court, then he's going to miss the entire first half and then come out and make his first three in the second half. So, I mean, he's got that balance. He knows kind of how to, I don't know, it seems like such a silly way to do this, but Michigan wins every other game. Like, so I don't think Tennessee's happy to see Michigan in their bracket, but I don't see Michigan passing Tennessee.
You know, I will say this, and thinking about this a bit further, Kennedy Chandler is extraordinarily quick and he's extraordinarily fast, but he is a true freshman. So what I would say is that, you know, it's possible that Devontae Jones may be able to sort of bully him off ball screens a bit, you know, sort of get in his chest. And he is excellent, as both of you guys touched on that floater game. And maybe that's an area of weakness that we can exploit. I mean, that's not a guy you want to ISO against. Like, he just moves too well. But if you give him a ball screen and you're able to put him in jail on the backside and sort of bully him a bit, you know, maybe that's another area that we can exploit.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a team that shoots very well from two either, right? So, you know, if they're in a situation where they're finding open looks from three and it turns into a shooting contest, I don't feel good about that. But if Michigan is getting them in situations where they're taking contested, difficult shots because they don't have a shot generator, then Michigan should be able to use Dickinson as the shot generator for them, because you can double him and he'll pass out of it and then you can get an open look, but got to actually do that.
they're another team that also lives and dies by their threes. You know, like I mentioned, like a lot of times they're going to find the open guys and get them there, but you know, they had a couple nights. The one loss they've had since the end of January was Arkansas. And I got to look again, but I think they're like 4-24 that game from three. So like that can happen to anybody, obviously. But their loss to Texas was a similar thing. They were 5-18 in that game. And that does happen to them. They've got some shooters who go cold, especially since they lost. here I go with that name again. Nakamura. You know, that kind of took away a lot of the spacing that they have. Took away one of the, I mean, he's not a guy who shot a lot, but it was just one more person that you had to guard on the perimeter and created more space for Chandler. So if they can't run out, if Michigan is getting set, and if Michigan is, you know, they do have some sort of answer for Chandler. The other thing is, you know, Tennessee, when they'll have nights where they're hitting 50% and they have nights when they hit 12%. So it could be another one of those games where it's just like, okay, whose threes are going in, because we've been high variance all year, and so have they.
Yeah, this very much, assuming Michigan can take care of the ball and value the possession out of a high turnover game, this very much seems like a make or miss type of game.
Well, one thing that's really interesting about this game, hypothetically, is that Tennessee is heavily dependent on assists on offense. So they're the number six team in assists per field goal make. Michigan is 18th at preventing assists. So that's a team that's not really comfortable pulling up off the dribble, doesn't really do a whole lot of ISO stuff, relies on the structure of their offense. And Michigan has done a good job. They run a lot of drop coverage, which induces people to kind of go one-on-one a lot and pull up. And that's been their major weakness. And that's not something that Tennessee really wants to do. So like, if Michigan's going to be in this game and if they've got a shot at winning it, it kind of feels like that's going to be the path where they're forcing Tennessee to take shots that they are not comfortable taking, and then they're canning their threes.
I mean, it sounds like a recipe to beat anybody. But Tennessee's not the best number three seed for no reason, right? Like, they're a very good team. They've lost one game since the end of January. Earlier before that, you know, they were struggling against better teams. They lost, I mean, they had a hell of a schedule, but they lost to Texas Tech, Alabama, LSU, Kentucky, Texas. Funny that Barnes, of all the teams to lose to, it was his old one. I think that's Texas's main, their big win this year, too. So, I don't know, I just really want to beat Rick Barnes.
I really have no feelings about Rick Barnes, but, all right, we're going to take another break, come back, kind of look at the bracket more generally.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality, the video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGoBlog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Randy, I need things.
hotter than Indiana fans who are like, why do we have to go to Dayton? Because we won that game and you did not win that game. And we're just going to ignore what happened the rest of the season because that doesn't count for us at all. It's just the one game. That's what counts. Randy?
You ready?
Seth? Seth, give me your honest take.
Michigan should have been a 16 seed because Michigan's winning every other game. And how fun would it be? I mean, for college basketball, not. I mean, Michigan, we're confident we're going to beat whoever we face the first week anyway, because it's just mad. At this point, we just have to trust it. But how bad would it be to be that one seed who's like, well, they have a resume of a low seed, but oh no, oh no, oh no. It'd be great for college basketball.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah.
It was a hotter take before, like, we got in the tournament. Like, when people were actually worried we were going to be in the tournament, that was my take.
I mean, percentage-wise, what would you have handicapped it before the selection today?
98%.
Like that Michigan gets in?
Yeah, the Michigan gets in.
99%. Pretty much everybody had him in except Jerry Palm. And then right. Jerry Palm was like, all right.
I mean, margin of victories on the season 3 was the lowest since Georgia in 2001.
I mean, we had a body bag game canceled too, so
that's right. Would have been four.
Well, anyway, Randy, give me your hottest take.
Michigan's gonna forget the win one, lose one theorem and win 5 in a row and make it to the championship game.
What? You have been so down on this team the whole year, and now you're just like, championship game.
So truthfully, like, when we go into the tournaments with like high expectations to do really well, I'm always like even more nervous that we're going to lose to some, like, the Pacifics of this world by some crazy spread out defense and a 26-year-old 6'10" guy who shoots lights out from half court. Like, I get so nervous about that, but now it feels like I can't. Part of me is like, I can't believe we got in. And then part of me is like, all right, who's Colorado State? We should be able to win that game. Then I'm like, I know Tennessee won the SEC tournament, but they're not the greatest. I don't think they're the greatest team. I think they can be beat. There are many other teams that I would. And then I actually think, like, what if Ohio State just up and beats Villanova? That's not impossible. And you meet Ohio State. There's a chance where chips can fall to where you're like, I don't know. We have a pathway to make
I would love to meet Ohio State without Big Ten refs around. That would be fun.
God, Liddell might have a foul called on him.
I don't know. They'll talk to the refs. I know. And Liddell doesn't do any. I mean, he doesn't, you know, jump into players at all. He stands his ground pretty easily. Yeah.
My hot take.
So that's my crazy take.
Putting Michigan State and Duke in the same region is karmic comeuppance for Michigan's excellent draw that they probably didn't deserve. Because now I have to root for either Duke or Michigan State. It's going to be Duke. Spoiler. But, you know, Michigan gets, they're not in Dayton. They get a very tractable first round game. They're in Indianapolis. Perfect. Perfect bubble draw. And then you're just like, oh, crap. Now I got to root for NK's last tournament. Like,
I mean,
couldn't Murray State have been the 7 in that region?
Here's the good news. They're not going to show many like sepia tone packages of Coach K and his tournament experience, right? So you'll be spared that. Oh wait, they're already cutting 15 of them to just run on the first day. Get ready.
Well, and they're going to have pictures of Izzo too. So they're going to cut back and forth between like Izzo in 97 and Coach K in 87. It's going to be great. They had hair back then.
I don't even know if I can watch that game. It's like, outcomes are acceptable. Cal State Fullerton. Do it.
Yeah.
Be legend.
That's it.
Davidson.
Do your thing.
Davidson to upset Michigan State. That's not a bad pick.
It's not a bad pick. That's not.
Trey Maddox of Cal State Fullerton.
Do it. As Gus Johnson said, get your Steph Curry on and ruin the game of basketball.
I will point out Tyson Walker like sprained his ankle against Purdue like right in their Big Ten tournament game. So, you know, if they're running AJ Hogard out there all game, like That's they're going to be an upset pick in my bracket, especially if you have anyone from, if you're doing a bracket with like people from Michigan, that's a great upset pick because so many people are going to have State, you know, they're going to have like just an extra bracket for State going all the way.
I think State played their best game of the year against Wisconsin, and that was the peak. That's the peak of what they were doing. And then I think they followed it up with actually a pretty good performance against Purdue, but couldn't hang on and couldn't and just, you know, it was close and they actually fought to the very end. But I think that's all they have in the tank. I actually think that an upset is definitely possible.
Holy crap balls.
Maybe that's my hot take.
So as soon as the Davidson Michigan State matchup got mentioned,
yeah,
like everybody on my feed was like, "Oh, it's Foster Lawyer versus Michigan State," which how does everybody know this? Because my assumption was that Foster Lawyer transferred to Davidson and played 4 minutes a game.
No,
he's got amazing. 123 O rating and he's shooting 45% from three.
I mean, I think Michigan State's going to have to pay some serious legal fees in this next game. You're welcome. Cut that as a promo.
Sorry, Davidson's just one spot behind them in KenPom too.
Nice.
All right. Davidson, Sweet 16, picking it in all my brackets. If you can't get enough of the Sklar Brothers, check out their podcast View from the Cheap Seats. Leave your hot takes in the comments of their podcast to delight and amaze all friendly and foe. All right, guys. So 9 Big Ten teams in, as Seth Davis complained about repeatedly, as if that's how it works. There's some sort of conference quota. There isn't. And there happened to be a couple of Big Ten teams that barely played themselves in during the conference tournament. But what do you feel is going to happen for the league in this tournament?
Well, Indiana and Rutgers are still not in, so they still have a little bit of work sure. to do. But, you know, Rutgers, you know, they deserved that last play-in spot. I think that spot was just owed to them. And Indiana, I was kind of surprised that they didn't make the field after their run in the Big Ten tournament. Because usually, like, they like a little hot team to be in there. But, you know, the other teams, they put State and Ohio State both on the 7 line, which I think might have helped push Michigan off the 10 line. Just because, like, where are you going to put them? You don't want to have a rematch there. And that was the problem with seeding all these Big Ten teams, is there's a whole clump of teams like Michigan, and they're separated by luck in their win-loss records. And then there's a whole clump of teams like up with Purdue and Wisconsin and Iowa, who, like, you know, where do you put those guys? And none of them really deserved a 1 seed. None of them really deserved terrible seeds. And I think they just split them up as best as they could. And that's why we got Colorado State, is just to kind of break that all down.
Yeah, I'm not... I hate to be Debbie Downer here, but I'm not terribly optimistic about the league's chances. I mean, I know Iowa has been sort of the sexy pick lately here, but if memory serves me correctly, a top 20 defense is basically a prerequisite to be a championship.
We have someone who bets on Iowa every year. We have someone on this podcast who always believes in Iowa.
It's a prerequisite to being a national championship contender, and yeah, I'm not buying it. Like, I think Illinois is pretty clearly the best team in the league. Now, whether that translates to a single game elimination format, I don't know. But defensively, I think just in general, the Big Ten is pretty down this year. So I'm not all that optimistic that we go through this tournament sort of and come out on top. So that's my general feelings. And I think it's a pretty weak defensive league this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of remarkable that, you know, the 4 top seeds in lead have adjusted defenses of 30, 38, 177. Like, that's not what you usually think of when you think of the Big Ten. So,
especially because we have all the centers in this league.
They have some gorgeous offenses, and there's just have struggled to play defense. I'm kind of similar. I mean, I'm just waiting for Wisconsin to get knocked out by Colgate because, like, refs that aren't in the Big Ten are going to look at Brad Davidson and be like, "You can't do any of that. You get out."
I mean, happens to them every year, right? Like, Wisconsin's the easiest, you know, goodbye seed. I mean, sometimes they make the Elite Eight and it's like ruins everyone's brackets because they know not to go with Wisconsin.
Well, they're a 3 seed and they're ranked below Michigan on KenPom. The only team in the country that was luckier that made the field is Providence, and they're a 4 seed ranked 49th on KenPom. So Michigan I mean, honestly, if they could just put a couple games together, like, you know, if they make, you make the Sweet 16, kind of leave the season feeling like it was okay. But I don't know. I mean, who are you guys feeling for Final Four?
That one's an easy one for me. You give me Arizona. That sort of size, length, and athleticism at all positions is something that's probably unparalleled to college basketball.
Yeah, I'm liking the chalk except for Baylor. Kentucky comes out of that bracket, and everyone else is pretty a chalk to me.
I mean, I like Auburn a lot. They've kind of scuffled lately, but you have a 6'10" shooter, you know, a guy who's a candidate for the first pick in the NBA draft, and then you have Walker Kessler, who's blocking 19% of opponent shots, and like that's a pretty good baseline to build from.
They're a good one to pick to go pretty deep too, because I don't like anybody in their side of the bracket. Like that was like the fifth one seed spot when you look at who's in there. I mean, Wisconsin and Colgate are two of them that you mentioned already, but
oh yeah, they also have a free pass to the Elite Eight, right?
Yeah, yeah. They got Miami and USC are the 7 and 10 in that bracket, and LSU and Iowa State are the other ones we haven't mentioned.
Right, LSU without Will Wade. Although losing Will Wade is not exactly a tactical disaster.
Who's going to roll the ball out now, Brian?
I don't know. I can't believe they fired him for cause. They like kept him around for like 4 years, and now they're like, for cause. Like, oh my God.
Do you remember I sent you guys that in our Slack chat? I'm like, why are they even doing this? And then 2 days later, boom, I was like, wow, are you kidding me? They actually followed through with it.
It seems like incredibly counterproductive, because you're already going to get lit up.
The timing of it makes zero sense. Like, oh, why? Yeah.
I didn't understand why they were keeping him. Like, you know, it's not like Will Wade is going to buy you a bunch of wins. Maybe like for the recruiting, maybe like, okay, get some guys on campus and then we'll let you go. But, you know, it's kind of funny how they just kind of randomly came out with it at this point. Like, okay, we got the guy. That's the guy. That's the one who did it. That's why LSU was cheating. That was him. We got them.
All right. Sleepers. Who's an unexpected Sweet 16 member? Don't say Wisconsin.
How about Providence?
No, that's a terrible pick.
They got Iowa coming up.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me. I'm just trying to, I don't know. Was it a sleeper? Let's see. I've drawn a blank here, gentlemen.
And North Carolina could come out of their bracket. They got Baylor is they're an 8 seed with Baylor and Marquette.
I mean, just in terms of like sheer talent and how they're playing lately, you got to look at Memphis. Like they got clunked by Houston.
You know what comes to mind is you know who's playing really, really well right now is Virginia Tech. Really well right now. They're surging down the stretch. That's a team that I could see winning a few games.
And I mean, I also, you know, Murray State, 30-2. They had a 13-point loss at Auburn, which really doesn't seem like that bad anymore. They beat Memphis on the road. They went through their conference undefeated. Like that's a team that could knock off a 2 seed
any given day, right?
Yeah, and then the other team that kind of pops out is San Diego State. So they're an 8 seed. They run a really weird defense. They're the number 2 defense in the country. It's one of those things where you could just come up against a team that can't crack a pretty good D, and they're 22nd in KenPom. That was actually the win that probably got Michigan into the tournament and the non-conference.
Two-one, yeah.
They also get Creighton in the first round. Creighton's without Ryan Nembhard, so they're a different team now. They have no point guard whatsoever.
And they have no shooting, which is bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, they shut down... don't worry about him. Sharif Mitchell is another guard. But yeah, like... I think with Nebhard out, they just have nobody to distribute the ball. No one can get open. So, I mean, that's kind of a walk for San Diego State. Then they face Kansas, and, you know, Kansas is beatable.
Yeah, I mean, they're not bad.
No.
But they are the worst one seed per the metrics. And, you know, they do rely on David McCormack for a ton of their offense, and he's just not particularly efficient. So, yeah. It could happen.
I hate that whole bracket. I mean, we're still talking about the Midwest. That's with Iowa and Wisconsin. And I mean, yeah, Auburn's coming out of that bracket, Brian. That's you convinced me already.
Yeah, that's my bet. All right. We're going to take a break, come back, and talk about some hockey. Maybe. Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy. His name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he was like, "Yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it."
I also like I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGo Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
It's on. It's on. It's on. It's on. I write a verse and leave reds on top of the page, a showstopper. But shit don't stop off stage. I do an all-night party, dawg. Have girls going wild like the Mardi Gras. I fucked off 5 cars looking at big screens. Bumping that filler, smoking that killer. No matter how old I grow, blaze up, y'all. Do the damn thing till my day's up, dawg. It's on, let's get it. It's on, let's go. It's on, let's do it. It's on, let's roll. To my Detroit player, big money making niggas. It's on. It's on. To my independent ladies, do the damn thing. It's on. It's on. You gotta get up, get out, dog. Go and get your paper. It's on. It's on.
Who got that sound beating up your block, making every porch?
All right, our hockey guys are currently unavailable, probably looking at their brackets at the moment, but Michigan beats Notre Dame 2-1 in one of the best ghost environments in recent history are a really fun game to be at, just in terms of like, oh yeah, this is what Yost used to be like a lot. But people were fired up, and Michigan beat Notre Dame at their own game.
Yes. Yes.
So they did not take a penalty. I mean, they took one penalty, but that was not a penalty.
they took a penalty. That was he definitely got whistled for something.
Matt Veneers got a embellishment penalty for being cross-checked from behind in one of the stupider calls I've seen this year. Not the stupidest, but also I saw him at Bush's, and they got New York strips. So if you wanted to know what they ate a few days ago, I have all the inside information.
That's the trick. You just need New York strips, and then you can play Notre Dame hockey.
I mean, I'm just not really a fan of New York strips, but whatever. Anyway,
I'm not a fan of Notre Dame hockey.
So Michigan was content to dump the puck in when they needed to. If there was an opportunity to get it on a rush, they get it on the rush, but they didn't force it. And they spent huge chunks of the first and third periods just absolutely dominating time and space.
Mm-hmm.
They get a ridiculous tic-tac-toe goal from the top line, and then Notre Dame kind of comes to life for three or four shifts and gets a goal that is a decent goal, but is very much just like throw it out in front and hope someone deflects it. It deflects. And at that point, it's 1-1, and you're just like, we are never going to beat this team.
Oh, God. Well, and it was such a puck. I mean, the goal itself was fine, but there was just like a puck lucky part of the game.
Oh, right, because the official got in the way of a Michigan clearance, and yeah. You're just like, we are cursed. Eric Portillo is going to leave the net in an attempt to score a goal on 5-on-5 play, and we're going to get an empty netter on our asses. But Michigan took a couple of extra shifts where Notre Dame was really firing on all cylinders and was able to kind of endure them and then re-controlled the game. And I think the thing that really stands out is that Notre Dame had 4 shots in the third period.
Yeah, and that was... That came down to Michigan out Notre Daming Notre Dame. And it's, I think,
right.
The best we've seen Michigan play lockdown hockey this game and like the second game against Ohio State at Yost. And both of those, were big Yost environment games too.
And so earlier in the year, it felt like they didn't have the patience to do that. So early in the year, the defensemen were super aggressive, even when it's like, 8 minutes left and you're up a goal. There was one incident in this game where I'm like, dude, it's 8 minutes left and you're up a goal. But it was just the one. And the number of true odd man rushes that Michigan gave up in this game was extremely limited. And a lot of the time it just felt like they were pressing because they felt like they should be in the lead. They were not in the lead. And even though Michigan had a 5-on-3, they didn't score on because goalie made a couple great saves and they rang the inside of the bar. It felt like they never deviated from what they needed to do to beat Notre Dame, beat a team that plays like that.
Yeah. Well, they kept the pressure on all the time. They forced Notre Dame to commit penalties because that's what happens when you're back on your skates the whole game. And that I hate to blame the fans for this, but like the fans were getting really into it. And that was we talked about the puck luck moment and like when everyone kind of started feeling like things are going well, that's when fans just kind of turned it on. And when Yost gets like that, Notre Dame is starting to make a lot of mistakes, and that's what
for
Notre Dame,
like
level
two.
But it's still more than I've ever seen Notre Dame make. But like it looked like Michigan was going to stifle that game after that, like after surviving that, and like because you get up 1-0 on Notre Dame. You're like, okay, can we only get to the midway point of this game, right? We get just past the midway point, and that's when they score. And it's like, no. And then, like, they thought the fans showed up for that. And that was the moment that things turned and that they started playing for us. And, like, we can talk about the defensemen, but, like, they've matured over the course of the year, and that's what they're supposed to do. I think they're probably pressing earlier in the season because, no one knew who was going to sit, and they're kind of fighting for playing time. But, this team looks the way that we thought Michigan hockey was going to look by this point. They've grown up. They're the most talented team in hockey, and I like their chances against Minnesota next week.
Well, pairwise update, Michigan is locked in to the number one or number two seed, and College Hockey News actually has them as a two-thirds favorite to get the number one overall seed. That is because they think Michigan at Minnesota is 60-40 in Michigan's favor. Just seems optimistic to me because the two games they played at Minnesota, they mostly got outplayed, and then Manny Beniers did something or someone did something where it's like, oh yeah. But they had a difficult time coping with Minnesota's speed on the open ice. So if you think that's more of a 50-50 thing, then it's a 50-50 thing. It really looks like Michigan is the number one overall seed with a win. And they have some chance of being the number one overall seed if they lose. But that would require Minnesota State to lose in the NCHC final, and they are an 84% favorite in that game over Minnesota Duluth. So, yowza! Minnesota's obviously locked into the tournament. They're a 50-50 between a one seed and a two seed. Notre Dame is locked in as the 8 or 9 overall seed. And Ohio State has a 41% chance to make it sitting at home.
That's a good chance. I thought it would be lower than that at this point.
Well, they're currently 15th, and there's no bid stealer in the Big Ten. There's no bid stealer in the NCHC. Unless I think Clarkson or Connecticut or Bemidji. I'm sorry, the 84% chance for Minnesota State is not against Duluth. It's against Bemidji. So
we're rooting for Bemidji to steal Ohio State's bid and give Michigan the number one seed.
Yes. So go Beavers. I don't even know if they're the Beavers.
It works. Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I'm Seth Fisher along with Brian Cook. If you have to play in, you're not in. Do you hear me, Indiana? Do you hear me, Notre Dame? Do you hear me, Rutgers? If you have to play in, you're not in.
Who's got it better than us?